second, India have won the Test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the 81 All Out podcast. I'm Siddhartha Vaidyanathan at Sidvi on Twitter, and I'm happy to be joined by two 81 All Out regulars, Subhash Jayaraman at the Cricket Couch on Twitter. Hi, Subhash.
What's up, Sid?
Hi, and I'm also joined by Ashoka at AB Van on Twitter, an 81 All Out gang member. Hi, Ashoka.
Hey, man.
Hey, so we are here to discuss Australia's fourth loss in a World Cup for 20 years. I think that is quite a feat in itself for a team to go so long and be undefeated so rarely. Today was India against Australia at the Oval, and India won by 36 runs. Quite a comprehensive victory, even though the margin was 36. A lot of the runs came when the game was well out of reach for Australia. And clinical performance throughout. So let's get Subhash into it. Subhash, what did you think? And was one of the more comprehensive victories for India against Australia in World Cups, right? Considering history too.
I guess the numbers bear that out. But what was interesting was, we saw India play New Zealand at the Oval during the warm-up game. And there was movement. And the Indian top order was rocked by Trent Bolt. And we played this game here. There was no lateral movement in the air, off the pitch. There was no turn for the spinners. So pretty much it was a bat v bat game. And both teams approached in a very similar fashion, do not let the opposition end by gifting them away wickets in the first 10 overs. Slowly build up the momentum and stuff. The only difference, after, in hindsight anyway, is that David Warner's innings, whereas Rohit Sharma and Dhawan picked up the pace, Warner just pottered around for a long time, except for a couple of good aggressive overs. I think in the final equation, he had 48 dot balls. You know, India on the back end, you could say Alex Carey's runs came after pretty much it was a foregone conclusion, but India also scored more, the majority of the runs in the last 10 overs, right? They scored 116 or so, something like that, in the last 10. And Australia, if you look at it, like Maxwell and Carey, Alex Carey, they gave pretty much the same amount of runs and similar number of balls as Hardik Pandya, Dhoni and KL Rahul combined. So Australia got the production from the lower down the order. They got the production from the middle of the order, from Steve Smith, Khwaja and all. But David Warner playing a very un-David Warner-like innings, even though he was kind of slow, even against Afghanistan, he wasn't this slow. I think he had the slowest 50 of his career in this match. I think that was the major difference between the two teams. You could say David Warner was slightly out of touch, or you could say that the Indian pace bowlers bowled really well, which I'll tend to agree with that. Bumrah and Bhuvneshwar were pretty good and did not let either of those David Warner to get off easily. So I think that's the basic difference in the final equation. Otherwise, I thought it was a pretty even Steven game, and I don't think Australia should be too sad with the result. And I expect Australia to be in the final four.
Yeah, so Ashoka, were you surprised at all by the decision at the toss for, India going in, deciding to bat first? I mean, they've been a good chasing team, and the Oval has also been a good ground for chasing in recent times.
That has been the problem with India, right? Like in a pitch like this, when Subhash says this is a bat v bat pitch, which it is. So that has been the only chink in the armor for the Indian juggernaut. Like that, when we are sent to bat, or when we choose to bat in a flat pitch, we tend to get around 300 or 310 after being like 180 for one in the 30th over. But I think today we kind of, there was a good course correction for that problem. So I was not surprised that we chose to bat first, but I was surprised that the way that the lower order kind of picked it up. I thought Kohli was slow for a while. Kohli could have gone up the pace. I mean, I'm just nitpicking, but otherwise, there was nothing much to complain, man. We had a very good batting performance as far as the batting went.
I was actually pleased that with all the talk before the World Cup being about, you know, number four, who is going to bat, what is this and all that, I was happy that India decided to change it around a bit and played according to the conditions. I mean, Pandya coming in was great at that time. He doesn't need any time to get set as such. He can come in and hit, start hitting from the first ball. And I thought that injection of momentum was really good and something that KL Rahul might well have done. Who knows? I mean, he came in at the end and scored 11 off three balls. So maybe he would have too. But I think they played the card well by going in with Pandya, right?
With this Indian lineup, and the record says that the top three score, what, 52-53% of all the runs in the last 4 years. The key has always been that, you know, you have to take early wickets with them. Otherwise, the template is well set. You know, sure, today was Hardik Pandya coming in, and it could have been, need not have been Hardik Pandya today, because he could have gotten out first ball edged and Carey catches it on another, you know, another day, another planet. Since Stark and Cummins could not take a wicket, the conditions didn't help, and the patience of the Indian openers also didn't help. The fact that they batted first and could not take a wicket for quite a while, that meant you're going to be running out of options no matter what. Because it doesn't matter who it is, you know, whether it is Zampa or Stoinis or whoever. If batsmen of this caliber know they can take risks, no matter how good a ball you bowl, pretty much you're going to hit it. Hardik Pandya has shown to be able to hit, you know, medium pacers as well as spinners equally well.
Yeah, I was really impressed with how all the Indian batsmen, didn't really need to premeditate or improvise. There was a lot of hitting in the straight zones, in the V. There was one Shikhar Dhawan 4 that he hit of Mitchell Stark. It was quite just a stunning shot. The umpire had to like immediately take evasive action and the ball just zoomed through. And similarly, Kohli's sixes and Pandya too. I mean, it was not like, the way we saw the Australian batsmen Khawaja moving across and trying to improvise with Bumrah or even Carey towards the end. There was solid percentage play. And I think one of the reasons why this team is also able to do this, of course, they're extremely good batsmen, highly skilled. But the other reason is that they don't have to overreach for the total, right? They know that they have a bowling lineup that's strong enough to defend a score, even if by chance, if they fall a bit short, they have that confidence in the bowling lineup. So I think that's one reason why they're able to play so naturally without needing to really try and over-accelerate.
I think in games where India bats first and scores more than 300, and in games where India bowls first with Bhuvaneshwar, Bumrah and the spinners, the records are like very, very different. Even though you play with the same four bowlers, if India does not put... today, they got the oomph from the middle order to get past 350. If they had put 325 on the board, they would have lost the game. Even with David Warner's slow innings, they would have lost the game today. The fact that this is also being played in the World Cup in not so small ground like Indian grounds kind of adds additional potency to the Indian bowling lineup, even when they are defending a total. And the fact that it was a very high total today also helped the cause. Otherwise, it's even Stevens, you know. The bowling lineup is good, especially when they get to bowl first. But the fact that they had a very tall score helped them today.
In terms of selection, they went unchanged for this game, but do you see someone like Jadeja coming in for maybe Kedar Jadhav, or do you see them sticking to this and keeping Jadhav there because you never know in case there's a top order wobble at some point?
I don't think they shouldn't fuss much about it because they are getting the benefits of Jadeja anyways by conveniently injuring some player. Some player does get injured and we do see Jadeja throwing in from the deep at some point in the game, but So they are getting the benefits of Jadeja anyways. Because I think he's the best Indian fielder in the last 20 years that I have seen play cricket. So that is his best aspect. So they are getting some value out of him anyways. But as far as batting and bowling goes, bowling, sure, he's a fantastic bowler. But batting, as far as batting goes, even Stevens between Jadhav and Jadeja any day.
Unless we go further in the tournament, and the Indian management decides to give somebody a rest, I don't see Indian 11 changing. Unless, obviously, considering everybody is fit in the squad, I don't see them changing 11 unless India is so far ahead of the rest of the group that they're willing to give somebody a rest. I don't see them changing it. Bhuvneshwar Kumar was very impressive today with the ball, especially when he came back in the second and third spells. And that was like classic Bhuvneshwar Kumar of last year's IPL, nailing everything, slowers. So that was fantastic. And, there was an argument to make for Shami. Hey, on a wicket that gives very little away, you need more pace and a guy who hits the seam. So any little life that might be there could be extracted. So there was an argument for Shami to play this game, but I think Bhuvneshwar's performance kind of shuts down that talk.
Yeah, so in terms of the Australian chase, it did seem a bit curious with how they were pacing it, especially Warner and Smith. There was a phase in which the run rate was asking rate was going higher and higher, and even two batsmen who have all the shots, they were a combination, I guess, of good bowling keeping them down as well as them not really wanting to go all the way. And on Twitter, there were a couple of people talking about that Mohali chase that came earlier this year when Australia chased down 359 with Ashton Turner playing like a freak of an innings. And it was similar there when they were just about keeping themselves in the game, but the run rate was going up, and then he came and played a freak. So I was, you can't use that as a template for anything, but were you surprised by the way Australia went about the chase in the first 30 overs, 35 overs?
The only thing that I would complain in the whole innings that chase was that I would have switched Khwaja and Maxwell. I would have sent Maxwell in the place that they sent Khwaja. But the way that Warner and Smith played, if you actually notice that there was a rain threat for some time, and at that point in time, there were like 23 overs, 24 overs and 120, 130. So if DLS had come into the picture, they would have been still in a good position to whack it out of the ground. As Subhash was pointing out earlier, that Warner innings was kind of a letdown. Other than that, Smith played beautifully, man, today. Smith and even Khwaja, to his credit, he did play well, 42 of 39, if I remember right. So yeah. He did play well. The only problem was that Maxwell should have been, they could have punted with Maxwell ahead, even if he had gotten like a 30 of 15 balls, 20 balls. He would have actually prompted some bowling changes that Indians would not have done it, because Kohli and team were like in cruise control from, say, over 20 to 35, which is where I think Australia kind of lost the match. They left too much to be done. Like, if I remember, it was 166 required of the last 90. If it was even 130 or 120, Australia would have been like far more comfortable, even with the loss of 2-3 wickets.
The overall approach, batting approach by Australia, I think was very good, very sound, considering, the modern day, no target is really out of reach. And the fact that they have confidence knowing that they can pull off a chase of this magnitude, because they've recently done it, even though the personnel has changed. But the only, as I said, the David Warner innings kind of put them too far behind the eight ball. They were behind the eight ball to begin with, obviously. So you're chasing seven runs and over. But he put them too far behind. Other than that, and I agree with Ashoka, Maxwell ought to have come in. And even if he scores 30, 35 at the 200 strike rate, changes the course of the game. Because he makes the damage so much earlier in the line, in the piece, that even Khwaja can come and run a ball, and then somebody else, like Alex Carey, plays a blinder, and then, you know, Coulton Isle or Stark, somebody gets another 200 run, you know, 10 out of 5 balls or 10 out of 4 balls inning, and then you're almost home. But they were too far in the hole.
So when Warner got out, I was just thinking, I mean, in the past, there have been instances when a team is chasing a big score, and there have been quite a few teams in the past that have just sent this one, like a pinch hitter, right? Maybe a number 10 or number 9 saying, hey, just swing.
And like Jagan Srinath, obviously.
It could be, or even Shane Warne in that quarterfinal against New Zealand in 96. Mm-hmm. Or there a few other cases. But teams just don't do that anymore. They don't want that momentum boost. They just feel that maybe their main batsman can give it anyway. Is it something that you've noticed too, or am I missing something?
I think the pinch hitters, I think there was recently a piece written by Scott Oliver about the floating pinch hitters. I haven't read the piece yet. It's on Cricket Buzz. It came out today during the match. He talks about floating hitters, like how Hardik Pandya was moved up, you know, Maxwell. I think the true pinch hitters, where you take a 9, 10, 11 or somebody like that, you know, your fast bowler, Katan, Adi, Sutravambar, that guy coming up and playing at 3 and 4, I think we have seen the end of it. It's just not fair, you know, and these days, bouncers are, well, you know, everybody has good bowlers at high pace. It's not fair to somebody that's not used to playing really quality pacers and asking them to come and throw the bat around. It's not fair. But instead of the real pinch hitters, we have these guys that are capable of playing these cameos, slightly lower down the order at 6, 7, 8. They are getting pushed up. Like Butler can, you know, Butler comes in at 6 and 7, can come in easily play at 4 and 3 easily. Same thing with Pandya. Same thing with Maxwell. So that, if you still want to call them pinch hitters, but these are, you know, actually accomplished batsmen / hitters. But yeah, there is some movement towards that, but not your typical Jagan Srinath coming in or Kapil Dev being sent up.
Yeah, and I think now, as you mentioned before, teams know that no target is safe. So even if they have to get 12 and over, 13 and over in the last 10, they back themselves. So they don't really feel like having that middle over momentum. Mm-hmm. When you know that you can anyway get that push if you have wickets in hand, I guess. So.
And secondly, even Usman Khawaja, we are being very unfair. Just because it's today's match contest.
I don't think we have been unfair to Usman Khawaja in this podcast today at all.
Yeah, but no. The point is, like, we are suggesting that Maxwell should have come ahead of Usman Khawaja. But Usman Khawaja is a guy who has done extremely well in the BBL. Like, he has won matches for his team in the semi-final and the finals. And at strike rates of around 130, 140. So, it is the age of sending the likes of Jagan Srinath or Shane Warne has well and truly passed, because the batsmen themselves in prime, like say the poorest batsman in IPL, that the well-accomplished batsman, which I would say is Ajinkya Rahane, in my opinion, who has a strike rate, still has a strike rate of 120.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he maintains an average of 30, which is still a fantastic thing. And since this is the same batsman, he can draw in from the same learnings and he can do that as well. Like 120 is like 7 or 8 and over. Seven and over. Yeah. So 133 is 8 and over. So the batsman can go at 7 and 8 and over. It is only when run rates shoot up to 10 or 11, that's what happened today. Like, there were like 16 overs to go and the run rate was already somewhere in 9 or 10. Yeah, 10, 11. So, that's when we were thinking like, okay, Maxwell should have come up. So, we are looking for like extraordinary talents to save the day rather than say a pinch hitter and a prayer.
Correct.
Yeah. So, one of the other things I wanted to talk about was India, I thought, were terrific on the field. I mean, that Jadeja catch, that run out to get Finch. And overall, I mean, you know, some nice stops and was very impressed with the energy there. Did you guys feel the same way?
I mean, India has been a pretty solid, safe catching team for a while. And they have been a pretty solid outfielding team as well for a while in limited overs. So I don't think it should be something that comes as a shock or a surprise to us anymore. You know, it's these are pretty... Okay, you can have... you know, Kuldeep Yadav is slightly slower on the turf, across the turf. But other than that, you know, you have pretty solid... fielders. You know, not everybody is great. You know, like there are only very few Maxwells and Jadejas around. But these guys are like 80% Maxwell or 70% Maxwell. And that is, you know, sure, Jadeja came in as a substitute for Dhawan, but Dhawan is a very good outfielder. Pretty safe catcher too in the outfield. So, you know, you expect two top teams to go against each other and, you know, bat, bowl and field really well. And so in that sense, I was not surprised. It was to be expected.
Oh, no, I was not surprised. But I think you're right. I think if India have a poor day on the field, then that should come as a surprise rather than, yeah. I mean, the good days should be seen as a norm now. Also, India were the home team today. The 99% of the crowd was backing them, and there was a sea of blue. And this is something that we've seen in World Cups recently. I mean, even the last World Cup in Australia, there was Indian support everywhere, and I'm sure in England with both the expat community as well as traveling fans, you'll see a lot of that going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, during 2015 World Cup, the South Africa match, it was like 99.9% was Indian fandom. And some random South African fans were there. And similar was the case today at the Oval. Plus, South London is like major Desi Adda. Well, England is a Desi Adda. So that was to be expected. But it was, you know, so you're not that... These days, anywhere India plays, maybe not so much in the Caribbean, anywhere else, you find Indian fans showing up in very large numbers. However, it was disappointing that, you know, for example, Maxwell comes in the 37th over and he has this world, one of the greatest fast bowlers in the game right now, bowling to him and against impossible odds, you know, very steep increasing run rate. And first ball, he casually drives him on the onside for a four. And then he hits like three-fourths of his first four balls he faces. And the crowd is like quiet. Nobody seems to acknowledge that the guy is doing something fantastic. I mean, first of all, you have a fantastic player. And then he's actually doing fantastic things against the odds. And that sort of thing really pisses me off. Sure, you know, you're an India fan. You go to watch India and you want India to win at all. But where is the grace that you acknowledge the effort, and also in this case, not just the effort, the genius level batting that Maxwell pulls off. Where is the acknowledgement of that? You know, that sort of lack of grace is very annoying. It's terrible for the sport. Sure, India fans can bring in the money, but being so partisan, hyper partisan, that you cannot acknowledge good things when they happen, that is terrible for the sport.
I guess I've become so insensitive to this issue that, of course, I should feel about it as well. But ever since, I think, 20 years, as far as I can remember, or even longer than that, I have very rarely seen fans of one team, especially, you know, I can talk only from an Indian perspective, that Indian fans applaud the opposition team, even in India. I mean, of course, in the IPL, it happens because you have Kohli and Dhoni and all who are big superstars. And if they're playing against the home team, the home fans will still applaud them. But when an opposition country team comes to India, I've very, very, very rarely, I mean, maybe with the exception of Chennai or a few other grounds, very, very rarely seen such applause. Ashoka, hey, similar?
I have two things to say. One is BMKJ, which is Bharat Mata Ki Jai. And the second thing is, where were you fans? Where were the Canadian fans when Vijay Bharadwaj scored like man of the series in Toronto? If you think these are all unrelated stuff,
that's Nairobi, Nairobi.
Nairobi, yeah. Sorry, okay, fine. Nairobi, take it, Nairobi. Where were the Nairobi locals who were cheering for Vijay Bharadwaj? See, such unrelated bullshit is what is being passed off for arguments these days. So I essentially support couch is archibald, but that's the state of things these that passes off for cricket fandom these days. Like, arey chal yaar, chutiya, kitna mara Kohli 82? Utna hi hai, wahi match hai. Dhawan, Gabbar ne kitna mara? 100. Utna hi match hai. Maxwell, ye to chutiya hai, kya karega? Kuch bhi nahi karega. That is the, actually, it looks very disparaging and it looks very disrespectful towards how we view cricket as a game. And I think that has become a minority these days. Like, people who watch matches for the contest between bat and ball is become minor. And those are viewed as killjoys as well. Like, people who are like, hey, always preachy and stuff. But I would strongly be on the side of a cricket coach in this matter, at least, because I think that viewing cricket as a game between bat and ball dispassionately is far more enjoyable, is what my thing is.
No, I agree. Right? And it is...
I think bullshit words like passion, like pride and all that is being thrown at something that needs to be simply viewed as a contest between bat and ball. And that is such a beautiful thing to experience. People, if more people give it a chance, I think that would be a fantastic thing to experience. Rather than just being like close-minded and saying, hey, India should win. Of course, India should win. I mean, all power to you. But view the opposition player. Like, Smith played a silky innings today. 69 of 69, 69 of 70 balls. Hardly any risk. He did what Warner wanted to do in the beginning of the innings.
But correct.
Zero mistakes till that he got LBW. That's a beautiful thing to watch. I mean, if you miss that detail, I mean, what are you doing with 7 hours of your Hotstar subscription or wherever you're watching cricket?
The two of you did the podcast with Daniel Norcross and Karthik Yedhate about what are you watching when you're watching cricket, right? And I think a lot of my heartache here was reflected in that podcast too. I don't really care, you know. Okay, sure, you want to watch the contest between bat and ball, but you know, all of us learn cricket a different way. We watch cricket in a different way. We watch it for different reasons and all that. Sure, you know, you want to watch India win. You want India to win, all that stuff. Great. But, you know, they're playing against a top-level team too. You know, it's not like India is going to score 352 and bowl Australia out for 10. And, you know, they also have world-class players and they're going to score. And you have to acknowledge that. You have to do that. Because it's only a game. At the end of the day, it's not life or death. It's only a game. And you have to have that grace to see the goodness in people. Otherwise, no matter what, you know, you could be a great country like the rising Asian giant, all that bullshit. But if majority of your people have this very small mentality, myopic view of things in a grander scheme of things, it's useless.
Well, the interesting addendum to that, of course, is that one of the sites of the day that went viral on social media was how some of the Indian fans on the boundary were booing Steve Smith, and how Virat Kohli basically gestured to them and said that, hey, you have to be clapping him. And then there was another clip later of Smith and Kohli, sort of Smith going up to Kohli and sort of shaking his hand or patting him kind of stuff.
So, bro hug.
Bro hug. So this is an interesting dynamic, right? Where you have fans who are partisan on one end, but a player, the biggest player in the Indian team, who is actually urging them to cool off on the partisan.
The paradox here is this, that Virat Kohli is the manifestation of the new and aggressive India. You know, the economically upcoming India, or already supercharged India and massive population and fan base that dictates what needs to be done in the world of cricket, at least. He's the guy that, you know, in the world, in the time of T20 and stuff, any press conference about Test cricket, he says, you know, India should support Test cricket. If India can support Test cricket, we don't have to worry about the future of Test cricket around the world. And he's the same guy when his supporters or his team supporters are being hyper-partisan, has that grace to say that, you know, this is Smith. Stephen Smith is one of the all-time greats, that, you know, he should be applauded rather than, you know, getting booed for a freaking nonsense. So, like, that is the dichotomy here, that Indian fans are going one path and the guy who's apparently internalizes all this is supposed to be going down that path, but he actually does a 180. So, you know, we have to, I mean, if people thought Virat Kohli is classless or immature or whatever, they need to recalibrate that and understand that he sees the humanity in, or at least the genius in other players.
It is very easy to paint Kohli as an MCBC guy, because that those are the words, I mean, the words like passionate and wears his heart on the sleeve. All this comes very easily to like people who portray him in the press, in the media. And this is a guy who's in the media all the fucking time. So it is very easy to easily stereotype him into a certain kind of thing. But it is well worth the effort to watch how he plays the game, how he approaches the craft of cricket, like how he watches the opponents, how he respects the bowlers and the opposition players. So this is also the guy who said that Aidan Markham is the most exciting talent, and I kind of loved why. I mean, when he said that, I kind of loved the aspect of his observational capabilities. Like, of course, Aidan Markham is a supremely talented player. So it is no surprise to me that he did this. Like, he went and kind of overtly gave a signal to the crowd that, hey, this is a great player that is representing a country. Of course, he has paid the price for whatever the things that have happened. Now he's back on the field. Why don't we respect the fact and respect his capabilities rather than chumma booing randomly? So it doesn't come as a surprise to me at all. Maybe, and this is a long time grouse that Cauchy will agree, that maybe there has to be slightly more nuance in the way that we paint people in the media. I mean, rather than writing empty filler words to describe a person, maybe a sportsman should be defined by how he approaches the game.
Yeah, the two are related, right? I think the two points about extreme fandom, where you just applaud your team player and you don't applaud the other player, you don't even recognize the other player doing well, the opposition, is related to the fact how very often players are just pigeonholed as certain characters. Like, you have the extremely modest cricketer. You have the very humble cricketer. You have the
gritty cricketer.
Gritty. You have the passionate. You have, you know, as you said, the heart on your sleeve, etc., etc. But actually speaking, just like the game of cricket is so complex and so beautiful to understand, and if you pay attention to all aspects of it, it's the same with personality, right? I mean, Virat Kohli, on the one hand, he went and, I mean, it was a joke, as he later said, but he said, he actually made a joke that said, if you don't like me, why do you live in this country? And why don't you go and live outside? Which became a massive deal. I thought much more a bigger deal than it should have been. But okay, he said that. But at the same time, he's saying this. And this is the complex nature of his personality. It doesn't mean that he is one thing, or it doesn't mean he's the other thing. He can have multitudes, right? Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think both the media as well as the fans, it's high time they portray it in that way. But again, I don't know if the economics of the media allow it, because the economics dictates that you pigeonhole and then you hype and you put down and things
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. You know, all your mocha shit and, you know, isbar, whatever, revenge bullshit, all that gets hyped up. And that's good for, you know, who are the broadcasters or Star Sports or whoever, and even for a cricket for, you know, to play up a character. And like you know, pair off all the redeeming qualities of a person and then take this one quality and say, like, you know, how many commercials of, you know, pre-series that you have seen of India play, in which India is playing, where Kohli is, you know, holding a bat in his hand and, like, you know, mouth is open and he's like basically yelling. How often have you seen it? Pretty much every single series is the same thing. Whether he has a bat or doesn't have a bat, that's the only difference. Otherwise, it's basically a shot of Kohli, you know, screaming, you know, when his team won or somebody taking a catch or a wicket or whatever. That's the portrayal of Kohli, and that's how Kohli will be. And whereas, you know, and they'll never show a picture of like that of Rahul Dravid. Rahul Dravid, like, they'll be a freaking temple. There will be Agraharam. There will be inner Sannidhi, and then Rahul Dravid will be doing puja or something like that. He'll never show.
Or there will be a library where he'll be reading books on quantum physics.
Quantum physics while discussing with Leo Tolstoy about war and peace. You know, like it's like media wants something where they don't want their audience to think. Like, this is it. This is, we have distilled it down to the essential nature of these people. Even though they're all complex human beings. You know, Dravid is just as unforgiving and Khadus as anybody that Bombay has ever produced, right? But it'll never be associated with Dravid. But media wants to like pare them down to the absolute essential, saying like, this is what this guy is. And that is, considering these businesses are built around the success of these people, they're doing a tremendous injustice and being unfair.
Yeah, and it is very important because our way of watching cricket on TV or not these days on mobile phones and laptops is an audio video thing. So you can't disassociate audio from video. Audio also informs a lot about the match. So how you call the match informs the viewers on what the match is. Like today when Subhash was saying that this is an evenly matched game, that's not how it was called at all throughout the 100 overs or however much overs it was bowled. So that was not how it was called. That's how it should be called. Like the only difference was the 15 overs that Australia kind of slowed down or when the Indian bowlers bowled well. And that's a matter of how you see the game. But it was a tight game. And that's how it should have been called. But today we are now saying that, we made an above par total and Australia always didn't look like it and they lacked intent.
I think we all agree that there needs to be more nuance and complexity that's coming in, but whether it'll come in or not is another issue for another day. Thank you so much for joining us, Subhash and Ashoka.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
So that brings us to the end of another episode. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you prefer. It'll be wonderful if you can leave a rating and a review. It'll help more people find us. And that can only be a good thing. You can also follow us on Twitter at 81allout and check out our previous articles and podcasts at 81allout.com. We'd love to hear from you, so please send us feedback and we look forward to doing another podcast sometime soon. Goodbye.
In the air, Srishant takes it! India wins! They'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.